Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil.
Ahí está el córner. Gol. Gabriel Paulista marca el primero para el Arsenal. El córner pisa con Mesut Ozil.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always with James from Gunnerblog. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
It's not really a goodly morning, unfortunately.
No, not a goodly morning this morning.
It's not a goodly morning this morning. David Bowie.
Yeah, that's a shame, isn't it? I know particularly for you, you've always been a big fan, haven't you?
Yeah. It's weird. You know, you have this thing in your head where you go, well, this is a person I've never met. Why do I feel so like someone has just punched me in the stomach? And I guess that's the beauty of art, is it, in a way, that somebody can create all this stuff that you listen to or you watch, or, you know, when you're a fan of somebody, and then that just becomes such a big part of your life. And it's bizarre. It feels weird, you know. Yeah, obviously, people will have their own experiences of death and grief and stuff, and there's that sort of thing in your head where you can't quite come to terms with the reality of it. It doesn't make any sense in my head that David Bowie has died, but there you go.
I suppose, the thing is, that is that odd thing of, you know, not knowing somebody on that personal level and yet feeling their absence. But I suppose the good thing about art is that obviously the work that they make remains, and obviously it's an incredible legacy that he leaves behind him and we can all still enjoy. So that is some consolation, I suppose, at least, but obviously not to those close to him.
Well, sure, of course. You know, but I think it's interesting this morning to look at the reaction on Twitter and look at the reaction on Facebook, because the post today, when I sat down to write Arsblog today, I literally couldn't think about football, or football was just like, well, fuck that. So I had to write about David Bowie. And sometimes, as you know, and as people who spend some time online will know, that there's always somebody who'll go, well, this isn't about football, what the fuck? But there hasn't been any of that, apart from one guy on Twitter who went, did he play for Arsenal? Who I studiously ignored because, you know, fuck that guy. but, you know, you sort of sit there and you write and you listen to the songs, you listen to the music, and you're right that it does live on and there is a legacy and a way of enjoying that. I don't know if you saw the press conference this morning. You know, it's not unusual for Arsene Wenger to be asked about things which have nothing to do with Arsenal, whether it's politics.
All sorts.
And he was asked by the guy from Sky, you know, who called him David Bowie, which was annoying. But anyway, that guy from Sky is quite annoying. But he asked Arsene Wenger about David Bowie, and he said, were you a fan? You know, what did... And he said, yeah, I'm a fan, but I'm not a big specialist in his music. But then he said, the message that he gave to my generation was really important, that after the Second World War, you've got to be strong enough to be yourself. Which is an amazing thing for a football manager to come out with in a press conference ahead of a league game against Liverpool, you know? And I think that's a testament to the, I don't know, to Arsene Wenger, obviously, but also David Bowie and the impact that he had on society and the world and culture. You know, 1969, he started. That's a long time ago, really.
And as Arsene alludes to there, I think his impact transcended music, didn't it? It was a broader cultural impact, huge figure in the world's culture, really, and obviously will be massively missed. So a bit of a downer to start with,
but you know, I think as well, it's worth, when somebody like David Bowie dies, that there's a celebration as well of what he did and what he gave us and all the great music. So if you want to go on to the Arsblog Facebook page today, there'll probably be some David Bowie videos and what have you on there. And what else was I going to say? There was something else I was going to say about this. I think, the other thing was that, you know, when somebody dies, there's normally cohort of people that will sort of make jokes about a celebrity death. You know, it happens. And the two occasions that I can remember in recent memory where it just hasn't happened, number one was Robin Williams. Was that last year?
I think so.
That was last year.
Last year. It's only just turned this year, isn't it?
So Robin Williams and David Bowie had this profile, this presence. And, you know, you couldn't say that every single thing that they did was brilliant. But I think they did it in such a way with such class and such... I don't know. I don't know how to describe it, but you just don't find too many people making those kind of remarks, that there's a universal respect for what they did and how they did it.
Well, you know, as you say, it's a real shame. Mm. But fortunately, over on the Facebook page, we can, as I say, we can still enjoy the music, and that is the nice thing,
yes.
I guess.
Go check stuff out today, yeah.
Today's a good day for that. Oh. So... what else happened? You scored for Shrewsbury. Do you know about that?
I saw that last night. Just as I was going to bed, I saw a lot of people tweeting at me, going, "Great goal!" Yeah. I didn't see the goal. Was it a good goal?
It's a decent enough goal. It was your second debut for the club, obviously, you'll recall.
Yes, of course. I've been there before.
Yeah, indeed. But you're back there now, and you've scored to beat Cardiff. So
fantastic.
Congratulations. Well done.
Well, take that, Cardiff.
I think they might have got your age wrong, if I'm honest with you, in a lot of the newspaper reports.
Did
I think they've done
you
a few favours.
Right, okay.
29, they claim you are.
Excellent. Excellent. I've lost a few years somewhere along the way.
You'll take that. You'll take that.
Yeah, this is, for anybody who doesn't know, a player with the same name as me who is playing for Shrewsbury Town. So...
sure, sure.
Yeah. So that, yeah, well, a great weekend for him and for me, obviously, by default. You know, I'm living the life of a professional footballer via proxy through Andrew Mangan of Shrewsbury Town. Well done to you.
Absolutely.
Sir. An FA Cup weekend. Not too many shocks.
No, Swansea went out, didn't they, against Oxford yesterday? That was a great game. I don't know if you saw any of that.
I didn't. No, no.
I saw it on like the Welsh BBC or something like that.
Were you in Wales?
No, but you know, via Sky, you get access to these things.
Oh, okay.
And it was very, very exciting. It was one of those games where either the atmosphere was brilliant or the mics were very well positioned in the stadium because, you know, on telly it really came across really well.
Mm.
And they got beat 3-2 by Oxford. That was quite exciting.
Wow.
Spurs, I suppose that wouldn't have been a shock had they lost at home to Leicester, but they got that late equaliser. That was somewhat irritating.
No, that's good. That's a good thing.
Is it? Oh, we want them to play all the games.
Well, it's good because now they have to play another tough game away from home against Leicester. So that's
true.
Good.
True. Chelsea beat Scunthorpe. Is that a shock now?
Could be, all right. Could be.
Could be.
I was telling my wife yesterday that I used to work for AOL, the internet company, and they had their support set up here in Dublin. And we did all the support for the UK. And I remember that I don't know if people remember this, but you used to get like a CD through the post or you get a CD in a magazine and you could sign up to the internet, this brand new internet thing, by using the AOL software, which was their sort of proprietary software to get you online. But they sort of kept you in this AOL walled garden. But we used to get phone calls all the time, not all the time, but fairly regularly from people living in Scunthorpe who couldn't sign up. They try and they go, well, what's wrong? They put in their name, they put in whatever username they wanted, they put in the address, and they just got rejected every time. And they'd ring up and they'd say, well, I can't sign up. And, you know, we had all these technical things to go through. Is it your TCP/IP preferences? Perhaps your modem is not connected. You go through all these tests, all these things, and nothing would work. And maybe you've got a corrupt version of the software. Delete and reinstall the software. Maybe that's what it is. And then eventually you go, and where exactly are you living? And they'd say, Scunthorpe. And you go, ah, that's why. And they go, why? Well, what is it? Well, the AOL software had these filters, so you couldn't use a swear word in your name or in your address or in your username. And if you think about how the word Scunthorpe is spelled...
I can see it.
You'll understand why the people from Scunthorpe could not sign up to AOL software.
Wow, that's fascinating. A little bit of internet history there.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll tell you what as well. Well, we're just talking about other things on this weekend. Did you hear about one with PSG? I think, you know, this might interest you on the subject of musicians.
I did hear, but please, you know, tell the story for the listeners.
Well, as far as I'm aware, PSG, for more than 20 years now, have run out to a track by, I'd say probably your least favourite musical artist. Is that fair to say?
That would be fair to say, yeah.
Phil Collins. It was Who Said I Would from the 1985 multi-million selling album No Jacket Required.
Right.
So there are multi-millions of that album out there for you to locate and destroy. And however, sort of on a somewhat sombre note, they recently changed that track to another one, O City of Light, O Ville Lumière, in honour of the victims of the November terrorist attacks. Now, obviously, while that's a bit of a sad note, the good news is they are talking about adopting it permanently, thus removing the spectre of Phil Collins from Paris Saint-Germain.
Well, the thing that I would question are the PSG fans unhappy about this move? Because if they are unhappy and if they would prefer to have Phil Collins for the music that they run out to, then I think it's fair to say that these people are the worst fans in football, right?
Well, there you go. I mean, according to L'Équipe, and I haven't got time to read the whole article because it is in French, supporters are divided. So there's some sort of civil war undertaking, you know, about whether or not Phil Collins should retain his place at the Parc des Princes.
Imagine like just a pitched battle in the middle of a PSG game. The game is going on. Zlatan is on there being a big scunthorpe. And in the middle of the stands, there are two factions fighting, the Phil Collins fans and the ones who want this other piece of music. That would be just amazing. A club destroying itself from the inside because of Phil Collins.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I don't know. Surely. They're going to seize this opportunity to rid themselves of Phil Collins. Imagine if Arsenal ran out to Phil Collins.
I think that would be just a travesty. It would be one of the worst things of all time.
It would really create a real sense of conflict for you, wouldn't it?
It certainly would. But I don't think that Arsenal, a club with such class and history and tradition, would soil themselves by using the music of a Tottenham fan to run out to. Just would not happen. So, you know, thankfully that's not a bridge we will ever have to cross.
Well, thank God. Thank God.
So look, should we talk about football?
Of course.
3-1 win over Sunderland. The second time in a month, is it, more or less, that we've beaten Sunderland 3-1 and with the exact same scorers.
Yes. Yeah,
because when we beat them in the league, it was Campbell, Giroud, then Ramsey. And when we beat them on Saturday, it was Campbell, Ramsey, and Giroud.
Well, there we have it. Amazing.
Yeah, I wonder what the odds on that would have been before the game.
Pretty long, I imagine. But also, Sunderland also turned up in that green kit again, which I just find completely bewildering. The camouflage effect.
Yeah, I don't understand necessarily green kit when you're playing on grass.
No, surely that can't be good.
No. I mean, something with spots or, you know, maybe they could get those things that runners wear. You know, you can get these things now. They're sort of like LED armbands that light up. You know, you should make yourself as visible as possible. Like the old Manchester United grey kit. You remember they took that off at halftime against Southampton because the players were blending into the crowd.
Yeah. Strong camo.
Yeah, strong colours. I mean, when are we going to get a team sponsored by Dino Rod? Who have it right. You know, you can't not see a Dino Rod van, right? Because they're luminous pink. You know, like highlighter markers. Stabilo. That's who we need to sponsor a football team. Because the kit would be amazing.
It would be exciting to see. I mean, you know, let's get them involved at Arsenal. Why not? Anything's got to be better than that third kit.
Yeah.
But yeah, fascinated by the green kit. Fascinated by what you've just told me. Same scorers. I mean, we shouldn't have bothered with any predictions. It was clear what would happen.
Yeah.
We already knew.
Yeah, but I thought it was quite an entertaining cup tie, all things considered. You know, I know the win feels relatively comfortable, doesn't it? 3-1, and, you know, we did, I think, I won't say dominate the game, but we were sort of in control for the most part. But when you look back on it, there were chances for Sunderland to score goals at crucial moments of the game.
Yeah, there were, actually. I mean, there was... Was it the header that hit the bar in the second half?
Yeah, Fletcher.
Was it 2-1 at that point? Something like that.
Yeah, it was 2-1. And he had another chance, like they had a free kick out on their left-hand side. It was curled in. And he had another free header, which he put over the bar.
Yeah, so they did have chances. I mean, I think we gave ourselves a problem by quite how sort of stupidly we gave away the opening goal. No? I mean, that was a real... It was a cock-up, wasn't it? There's no other word.
Yes, I mean, where do you stand on the blame game here?
The apportioning of blame.
Yeah, I mean, let's do it. I mean, I know we're not here to, like, crucify players, but for the sake of entertainment, let's talk about it. I saw people saying, well, that was a ridiculous pass from Gibbs to Koscielny. But, I, you know, to my mind, it was really Koscielny should have just played it first time, just got it away and taken it from there. But, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, with that one to hedge bets, I think you can apportion a bit of blame to both. But I would agree. I think my initial reaction was it was a Koscielny error, and a whole bunch of people came back at me saying, wow, no, it was Gibbs, really. I mean, it's not a brilliant ball back to him. He is under pressure, but there is nothing to stop him booting that into touch. And that's what he should have done straight away if he felt that he was under in any danger of losing the ball. But he's very confident dribbler. He likes to take people on. I think he thought he could get away with it. He didn't. And there we go. We were behind. It was against the run of play, but, you know, just made it a bit of an uphill struggle, didn't it? It was a shame for him on a day where he was wearing the captain's armband.
Yeah, hang on. I think my front door just went. Hang on, I'm just gonna check because there's nobody else here. So hopefully somebody is not robbing the house. One sec.
Imagine if they are robbing the house. That'd be a shame.
No, seems to be okay.
Good, no robbing.
No, well, not as far as I know. If there is a madman in the house with a knife, he hasn't yet made it upstairs.
Okay.
So if you hear any screaming in the near future, it's probably just me being murdered, but there you go.
There we go. That would really confirm that this is not a goodly morning.
No, absolutely not. I prefer not to be murdered today of all days.
Let's make it tomorrow.
Yeah, all right. I think you're right about Koscielny. Bit of an error. And I thought maybe in general we weren't that great at the back, but hey.
Yeah, it's probably fair to say, because this was only Sunderland without some of their key attacking players. So the fact they created so many chances against us, I suppose, a little bit of a worry.
Mm, do you worry a bit that when we are heading into a period when we're going to face much better teams, that if we give them those chances, they might be a little more efficient?
I would say yes, I do worry about that. I would say I emphatically worry about that. But I don't know if it's down to the back four, levels of concentration there, or if it's to do with the lack of midfield protection. I do think we are missing Coquelin a lot. You know, I think Callum Chambers had an all right game in midfield, but I don't think he's anywhere near that level. I think there's probably a bit of fatigue. Someone like Hector Bellerin, you know, as good as he was going forward, and he looked absolutely amazing. Maybe mentally he's getting a bit tired now, played a lot of football over the Christmas period. Hopefully, you know, we bring in Per Mertesacker, a bit of freshness for the next game, and we tighten up a bit, because we were a little lax against Sunderland. I think that's certainly true.
We did get back into it very well, though. A nice goal from Joel Campbell. Nice move from Arsenal down the left-hand side. Good pullback by Theo Walcott with his left foot. And a really tidy finish from Campbell.
Yeah, I had a real Andre Mariner moment where I initially thought it was Kieran Gibbs who crossed the ball in from my seat, because I couldn't believe it. Theo Walcott had gone to the byline and crossed with his left foot. And then a really nice finish from Campbell, who I thought had a really excellent game. I thought he was probably our best player on the day.
Yeah, he was great. I thought he was very, very energetic, very productive. And it feels like he's sort of growing into the team well now, doesn't it? When you compare him to the player from 2 months ago, and obviously we can all talk about the benefits of first team football and playing regularly, but not every player who plays regularly gets better or does well. You can play regularly and not impress, and play regularly and still struggle for form and confidence. So it's great to see that he's really found something in his game over the last 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought that, you know, without several key important attacking players like Alexis and Ozil, I thought Campbell was really someone who stepped up and took responsibility. And for someone who was on the fringes of the squad, as you say, a matter of weeks ago, that's really encouraging and pretty impressive too. And it was a really good finish, actually. Like, it looked simple, but to take it first time as he did and sweep it into the bottom corner, a really great goal.
It was a bit sort of... What's the word I'm looking for? The game, I won't say flat, but it was a bit even, wasn't it, in the second period? And we didn't necessarily look like making the breakthrough. And then Arsene puts on Aaron Ramsey, because he is that kind of a player who can make something happen. Before we talk about Ramsey's goal, the man that he came on for was Alex Iwobi, who was asked in his first start at the Emirates to play where Mesut Ozil plays.
Mm.
I think the performance that he put in was worthy of that position. He had a really tidy game.
Yeah, I mean, that's no mean feat, is it, to step into that number 10 role? That's a big call from Arsene Wenger, because he, often when he's introducing a young player, even if they are someone who prefers to play centrally, he'll do so in the wide areas. You know, and when we've seen Iwobi previously, he's predominantly played as a winger, but he gave him kind of the keys to the midfield engine, didn't he? It made him the sort of chief playmaker of the side. And I thought he was very good. I thought that he tried to make things happen. I thought that, you know, his dribbling was good. He looked to take people on, which shows some confidence. But what Arsene spoke about after the game, and I thought which was maybe more subtle but still evident in his game, was the weight of his pass was excellent and the timing of his pass.
Yeah, yeah. That really stood out for me, I have to say. The way that he used the ball, the way that he passed it, and even Arsene Wenger commented on it after the game. He said something about the pace of his passing, or the weight of his passing, was really good for a young guy who could have been inclined to like play it safe. You know what I mean? He did try some things. He made some runs. He tried a lot of forward passes. And the easy thing would have been for him to just like move it left and right, you know, and keep things ticking over in a very safe way. But I like that he took some risks. But I also like that he took those risks with some real quality as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought, you know, watching the game, I actually called it a couple of times his full debut, because I have erased the Sheffield Wednesday game completely from my mind. It turns out I've forgotten that that even existed. But I think having started and been involved in that game, and that been such a disaster, probably great for his confidence to get this opportunity to play at the Emirates and for it to come off so well. So, yeah, great day for him, I thought.
Aaron Ramsey then with a goal. Hector Bellerin involved with the assist, but a beautiful pass from Joel Campbell. A real sweet 1-2 that just carved their defence open, and Bellerin's pace got in behind. Ramsey's finish just perfect with his left foot.
Yeah, exactly. Really nice goal all round. Really good weight of pass from Campbell. Brilliant run from Bellerin. Good to see those two, you know, building that relationship on the right-hand side. And Ramsey tucked it away. I thought, as good as someone like Iwobi was, I thought that once Ramsey and Arteta came on, we did look a bit more stable in the middle of the park.
You know,
if you think about the trio Arsene Wenger picked, it was Iwobi, Oxlade-Chamberlain and Chambers, and none of those players have significant experience in that area of the pitch. So,
or ever played together before.
Exactly, exactly. So I think naturally we were slightly more ragged in the middle of the park than usual, but needs must. That's an area where we're really lacking depth at the moment, and Arsene felt he had to change it up. So we got away with it in the end.
And a goal to more or less seal the game. Again, Bellerin the provider, Olivier Giroud. I thought this was great because the pass from Oxlade-Chamberlain with the outside of his foot to Bellerin was brilliant. And I think that's something that he needed, even if it is just a pre-assist, so to speak. But what I really liked was the fact that Bellerin looked up and he saw where Giroud was going to run and played the ball perfectly to him right at the back post. I mean, he couldn't miss. It was a tap-in.
It was. It was a brilliant pass from Oxlade-Chamberlain. Incredible run from Bellerin. I mean, it is amazing that he's still doing that in the latter stages of a game, having played so much football, as we say, over the last few weeks. You know, Debuchy's not been thrown in. You know, Chambers has been needed in midfield. And Bellerin just carries on going. He really is like Speedy Gonzalez or something. For two assists for any player in any game is a hell of a feat. You know, when it's Mesut Ozil, we're raving about it. But for a guy who is ostensibly a defender to do that, super impressive. So, and nice for Giroud to get a goal, because I actually thought he had quite a difficult game. I feel like he's played a lot of football too, and that might slightly be taking its toll on him. So good to see him on the score sheet, because his goals do tend to come in bursts.
Yes, as he said afterwards, no Ozil, no problem.
No Ozil, no problem. I mean, I'd like Ozil back, please, though, saying that.
And Alexis back, that would be good. But Alexis is going to be short, apparently, for the trip to Anfield. Arsene Wenger saying that he's not quite ready yet. I think he wants to be like absolutely positive that his hamstring is 100%. He said again at his press conference this morning, you know, Alexis will always tell you he's ready to play, even when he's injured. So I think they're being super cautious and giving him just the amount of time that he needs, another few days of training. A bit of a blow, though, for Wednesday night. Even if Liverpool are in a bit of a mess, you'd prefer to be going there with Alexis.
You would, yeah. I think this is going to be a difficult game. I mean, Liverpool are in a bit of a mess, but Klopp's results against the big teams have tended to be pretty good, haven't they? He had a good result at City, a good result at Chelsea. So I think this will be a really tricky game. It'd be fantastic to have Alexis on board, but then if Joel Campbell plays like he did at the weekend, yeah, maybe we'll be all right.
Yeah, well, look, you know, all you can ask, I think, when you do have players missing, and important players missing at that, is that the squad players step up and make the difference. And I think that's been perhaps one of the features of this season, is that players that we haven't necessarily expected to make a difference, a bit like Coquelin last season, Bellerin again, you know, they've come in and they have produced. You know, if you think even somebody like Olivier Giroud, who was in the desire for a new striker this season, roundly written off by large sections, or I won't say large, by some sections of the Arsenal fan base, simply because of who he wasn't, completely ignoring what he actually is and what he can do. And, you know, his scoring record since he's been back up front for the most part has been really, really good. And Campbell playing a great supporting role there too.
Yeah, Campbell, Flamini would be another one. You're right, the squad players have really stepped up when required, and long may it continue, because with our injury problems, you sort of can guarantee they're going to be relied upon at some stage.
So anything else strike you from the weekend, or will we call it a halt to part one?
So, I mean, obviously, you know, just good. I mean, good to get into the next round, isn't it? I mean, I think there's been so much focus on our Premier League campaign that inevitably the FA Cup is kind of playing second fiddle. It feels like less of a priority this year, but I don't think that diminishes its significance. And, you know, you want to stay in it. You want to try and go as far as you can. I mean, imagine if we could get to a third successive cup final. That would be a hell of an achievement in its own right. So let's hope we get a kind draw, a home draw. That's what I'm after,
that
another home
good.
Draw.
Yeah, that would be good. And I think maybe as well there's people look at the two things as if they're mutually exclusive.
Exactly.
Forgetting, of course, the number of doubles that we've won. So, you know, the two things can go, they can go hand in hand.
I mean, a double would be nice.
That would be nice. That would be really nice, wouldn't it? Yeah.
It would be. But let's not get ahead of ourselves anyway.
Yeah, because then that Joel Campbell has won the double song would, you know, be great.
I mean, I'm just saying, you know, it would be good.
All right. Well, look, we're going to take a short break and we're going to come back in part two with your questions. Hang on.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to the Arsecast Extra. This is the part of the show where we're joined by a very loud bird outside James's window. Just let's have a listen. Yeah, I can hear him.
You can get him there. Yeah. I mean, look, there's no more lorry, but I've got that little bird now. He's my little mate. He lives out there.
Yeah.
And
what's his name?
Bird.
God.
Bird the bird.
Bird the bird. Just so there's no confusion about what he might be. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't want to get people's hopes up that it's not going to be a bird.
Yeah.
So I always say, can I bring bird? And they go, yeah, bring him along.
All right.
They know straight away. Get the seeds out. He's coming around.
We should welcome Bird to proceedings. And this is the part of the show where we answer your questions. We're going to do that in just a couple of moments' time. But James, I just wanted to bring something up. Two things, actually.
Two things.
Right. The first thing was that last week, for a day and a half, the Arsecast, via the Arsecast Extra, was number two in the iTunes charts for sports podcasts in the UK. So thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Yeah, to everyone. I, you know, not so much to you. I don't quite know how iTunes do it. You know, I know that it's like a combination, this algorithm they have of downloads versus people leaving ratings and people subscribing to iTunes. So if you're on iTunes, if you want to leave a rating, you want to leave a review, you want to subscribe to the show, if you haven't already, please do that, because then we could get to number one. You know who stopped us getting to number one?
Who was it?
Football Ramble.
Oh, Jim Campbell and his pesky chums.
Jim Campbell. Yes.
Oh,
another so-called comedian like yourself.
Yeah, oh, they're the worst.
They are the worst.
Well, listen, I think, I mean, first of all, in our defence, they're talking about all of football, so they've got all the football fans listening. We've only got Arsenal, hopefully, I imagine.
That's true.
It'd be weird if there are, like, Leicester fans out there listening to this, but if you are, welcome. Please subscribe and rate us.
I did see during the week, actually, somebody mentioned, I think she was a Bournemouth fan, and she said, I don't even like Arsenal, but I can't stop listening to that Arsecast Extra podcast. So there you go.
Really?
Yeah. So maybe we're spanning the whatevers, the gaps.
Well, if you are a fan of another club, get in touch, because I'm bewildered and intrigued.
Mm.
But yeah, let's get to number one. I mean, I know that's ambitious. I know that's greedy. I know it's just so I can screen grab it and tweet it.
Yeah.
But I just want that moment.
Yeah, we want number one on iTunes t-shirts. You know, we want to live vicariously through you guys, and you're the guys that can help us get to number one. So do whatever needs to be done today on iTunes. Unsubscribe and subscribe again. Rate, review, share it, tell your friends, whatever it needs to happen. Well, you know, because we beat out Football Weekly, we beat out The Game podcast by The Times. You know, we were almost there, man. Runners
those up. Are proper people. Those are proper people.
Real.
I am literally wearing nothing but underwear as we speak. We were number two. Incredible.
Even Bird likes it.
A lot of people just unsubscribed, unfortunately.
Well, you did put a fairly gruesome mental image into their heads.
Our chart position is plummeting.
Mm.
Don't worry, guys. That was just for effect.
Yeah.
I'm wearing all of my clothes simultaneously.
All of them, like a giant marshmallow man.
Absolutely. I'm enormous. I've got four coats on. I'm really hot and sweaty. Yeah, we'll have to crack on.
In fairness, the J-Train tracksuit pants.
Yeah.
They're there. Did you see the blog last week? I think I photoshopped Kanye into a pair of them.
Yeah, yeah.
He looked great.
Look, I'm telling you, 2016, that's the new look.
Yes. I was just waiting to see what Bird thought about that. That's all right.
Oh, I see. Let's see.
Yeah. So, look, thanks everyone for listening. And, let's get to number one. Come on. The second thing that we criminally neglected to mention the first half of the show. Come on. Can you think of it?
Oh, I know what it is. I can't believe it. People will have been listening to that for that from the very start of the show.
When are they going to mention it? When are they going to say this thing that happened that was like one of the most amazing things of all time, and they completely didn't?
The landmark moment of the season thus far.
Mm.
We are, of course, unless I've got this wrong, which would be humiliating for everyone, we must be talking about the emergence onto the field of none other than hashtag The Jeff.
The Jeff!
My name is Jeff.
Yes. Come on.
Did you notice that Arsenal's official Instagram channel has started using the hashtag The Jeff?
Yes, I did notice that. They've co-opted it, which is fine. We're happy with that.
Yeah, of course.
We're delighted to add to the hashtag lexicon.
So go on, what did you make of The Jeff?
Well, you know, it was a transcendental moment. Really,
we
wasn't
couldn't look straight at him.
No, it was just like, oh my God, here is the Jeff, and this is Arsenal, and the Jeff is playing for the Arsenal. It was meant to be. He could have had a goal.
Right, he could have done. I don't know what I would have done. I think I would have passed out from the excitement.
Mm. Yes, it was great to see him on, because you know he's been on the bench for the last few weeks. And obviously when Iwobi came on and played the way he did, you can see why the manager chose him, you know, to play and fair play. And I'm delighted for Iwobi to have done that. But, you know, there's something about the Jeff. I don't know. Did you read Mikel Arteta?
Yes.
Yeah. Like Arteta was talking about him in the match day program. I'm just going to, I was going to say I'm going to get it up here, but I'm going
to
try.
I think everyone will at home listening to this description of Jeff Ren Adelaide.
Here it is. Just going to find it here. Now, he was talking in the programme about the potential of Jeff Ren Adelaide, and he said, he's got really big potential. I believe he's got all the attributes to become a really good player. He's still at a young age, but he's listening. He learns a lot. I think he really wants it. He's hungry. And if you give him time, he could have a really positive career, as he has something about him. So I think we maybe have to give him time. And, you know, I wouldn't like to think that we're, you know, creating a hype train as well as a J train around him. But, you know, we all love a bit of the Jeff. Interestingly, Arteta, the last player that he spoke about in that way, he said he's going to be, he said, I think he's a top player. He's going to be the right back of Arsenal for many years, in my opinion, providing he continues to progress in the way he has been doing. And he's talking about Hector Bellerin. This was
Gary Gilbert. Oh, Hector Bellerin. Yeah.
This was in September 2014. So perhaps Arteta might know what he's talking about.
He might just, mightn't he? And if he identifies the Jeff as one to watch, then it means that we have been right all along. And actually, the greatest footballer in the world is not Lionel Messi, as will be named at the Ballon d'Or ceremony this week, but the Jeff is hiding. It's the top secret operation. We're slowly unleashing him on world football.
Yes, yes.
Exciting times.
Indeed. Arsene Wenger saying today he's an enemy of the Ballon d'Or.
I'm an enemy of the Ballon d'Or.
He said, I'm an enemy of the Ballon d'Or, because he was asked, who do you think is going to win it? And I know you're not a big fan of this. He said, I'm an enemy of the Ballon d'Or. And we all know Messi's going to win it.
Fair play.
Yeah. So look, will we get on with some questions before we Jeff the Jeff out of the Jeff?
Let's have some questions. Shall I do one?
Yeah, go on.
Okay, this question was submitted last week, but we missed it. It came in just too late. But fortunately, thank the Lord, it's been resubmitted. It's from The Stewed, and he's at Zap83. And he asks, could you tell Arsene Wenger and Manuel Pellegrini apart if you could only feel their faces by hand in a darkened room?
I thought this was a brilliant. I saw that last week just after we'd finished recording. It's so good. Yeah. Such a great question. I mean, I don't know. I don't know.
Imagine you're in this darkened room. You've got Pellegrini and Wenger sat alongside. You can listen to the sound of their breathing, but nothing more than that. And you've got to, you know, like the young boy in Hook who realises he's got Peter Pan in front of him just by touching his face, the familiarity. Can you identify Arsene Wenger over Pellegrini?
I'm sitting here now with my eyes closed, with my two hands out in front of me, trying to, like, Pellegrini on the left, Arsene on the right, Arsene on the left, Pellegrini on the, you know, yeah. I think I could do it, yeah. I think I could do it.
What are the defining features? Has Pellegrini got a more pronounced nose? That's my that's my instinctive reaction.
My feeling would be that the two things that I would go for, number one, I think Arsene Wenger's face would be thinner than Pellegrini's. So yeah, you could do the measuring thing.
He's a thin man.
Yeah. But I also suspect that Arsene Wenger's Adam's apple would be slightly more pronounced than Manuel Pellegrini's. I don't know. Maybe it's something to do with the Chilean people. Maybe their That's Adam's apples are not quite as out there as the French. I don't know. But those would be the two things that I would go for. I'd like measure the width and then go for the Adam's apple. And I'm pretty sure I could pick out Arsene Wenger.
I think there's a little bit of a difference in hairstyle as well. I think, you know, Arsene's got the sort of short back and sides, but Pellegrini has cultivated these kind of wings at the side of his hair, like, you know, just above and around his ear, little tufts. I think they would be a dead giveaway.
I would have said hair would have been where they're really quite similar, actually. So I wouldn't have tried for the hair. I mean, I'd say both of them have that kind of quite silken, soft, older man hair, you know?
They've got that lovely old man's hair. Yeah. Lovely old man's hair. I want to shave it off and knit some underwear out of it. Lovely old man's hair.
What about you? I mean, could you tell the difference?
I don't know. I'd like to think so. This is what I would say. I'd love to have a go. If Barclays or someone could organise a special Premier League event where they made this happen, if a PR got in touch with me and said, come on down, have a go at this, I'd be there in an instant.
Yeah. I mean, look, this is the era of viral marketing. You know, imagine the crossover between Arsene Wenger, Manuel Pellegrini on the Arscast Extra. A blindfold. I mean, the YouTube video, the YouTube hits would be through the roof.
We'd smash the iTunes chart. I wouldn't be worried about it.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Whew, it's an exciting prospect.
It is an exciting prospect. Try to calm yourself down. Have you got any questions?
Oh, I do have a question.
Oh, go on.
All right, here's one, and it comes from Mish, who is at Michal Datani. And okay. He says, you think Ospina is off at the end of the season?
Is that an accusation or a question?
No, it's a question.
I don't know. Do you know what? When he missed the game the other day, which we didn't touch on, there were a few people saying, oh, yeah, he's injured. Yeah,
the
right.
Groin injury.
Oh, we've heard that one before. But I dismissed that straight away because ultimately we can't afford to let him go, can we? Should something happen to Peša Cech, we definitely need him with Chesney out on loan. Come the end of the season, that might change. He can't be too happy, can he, with the state of play. As an international goalie, you know, he's not getting a lot of game time at all. So he can't be chuffed with that. It wouldn't surprise me if he looked to move on, but, you know, that would create a problem for us. It's hard. It's hard to get a number two who's of the requisite quality to, you know, I guess keep the number one on their toes and replace them when required, but who's also happy to sit on the bench. Mm. It's a very, very difficult balancing act.
Yeah. I mean, what was interesting was the night before the game, obviously Arsene, after his press conference the other day, excuse me, I dropped the pen. I'm just going to get my pen back.
Don't worry about it, mate. I've got a bird over here.
That's all right.
We've all got problems.
Yeah. But he talked specifically about Ospina and said that he didn't buy Cech because he was unhappy with Ospina. It was just that the opportunity came to buy essentially a better goalkeeper. I mean, he couldn't say that, but, you know, he said he was very happy with Ospina's performances and his dedication, professionalism. And he thought that as Cech got older and if Ospina stayed, he could be the man eventually to take over. Now, I'm sure some of that was a bit of a confidence boost thing for a player before he plays in a game after, you know, his last appearance, which was a bit of a tricky one, of course, that one against Olympiacos when he chucked one in. But, you know, for him then not to play in the game, I mean, did he pick up a groin injury in training just before the game?
I don't know.
It's a weird one. It was a little bit weird.
It was a bit odd. And I'll be honest, Ospina, I think, is right, performed relatively well last season. But I was still happy, in a way, to see Cech in there.
Mm.
You know, he just provides that much more security and was needed. You know, I thought he was actually needed on the day. But I don't think Ospina's going in January, but it wouldn't surprise me at all to see him go in the summer. What do you reckon?
I would agree with that because I think, you know, he is an international goalkeeper. He's first choice for his country. I think that he's going to be relatively unhappy at being on the bench. You know, at 25 years of age, he's a guy who came to Europe and played first team football for Nice every season. He came to Arsenal, was behind Chesney, won his place ahead of Chesney. Well, thanks to Chesney's idiocy, he got a chance in the team and kept it. And I think he must have thought, well, hey, you know, I've come to a big club. I've worked my way into the number one position. And now all of a sudden I'm going to be behind a guy for the next, well, three or four seasons anyway, if you look at how long goalkeepers can go on for. So I don't think he's going to sit on the bench, you know, and I think I understand that. You know, as you said, it's very difficult to find that balance between having a goalkeeper good enough to challenge for the number one and being happy to sit on the bench. You've got countless Richard Wrights and Stuart Taylors who aren't really good enough to play regular first-team football for a club like Arsenal. You know, there are very few really good number two goalkeepers around, are there? When you look at the clubs.
No, there was that period of time a couple of years ago where it was very on trend for clubs to have two top-class goalkeepers. You know, Chelsea had both Cech and Courtois. You know, United had, they still do, I guess, De Gea and Valdes is still there. I think Madrid had Navas and Casillas, but a lot of those have moved on since because I think it is quite difficult to sustain. And ultimately, when you look at number two, generally, you're probably looking at someone at one of the extremes of their careers. So either a young goalkeeper, very promising, but who's not yet at an age where they expect to be playing week in, week out, or someone who's a little bit older maybe and happier to sort of be a mental figure and be on the bench more, like Chelsea had Mark Schwartz a couple of years ago. So definitely something to look at in the summer if Ospina does want to move on, because I can't imagine he's going to be happy to spend the next few years on the bench. It doesn't look like Cech's about to enter a decline anytime soon.
No. All right, your question.
My question. Okay, this is a bit interesting. Well, in the light of him joining Bournemouth, Sanchez's Rabbit, at Sanchez's Rabbit, asks, why did Yaya Sanogo get so many chances and Afobe get sidelined? Is this Arsene's French agenda?
No, I don't think it's the French agenda. I mean, I think asking why Sanogo got so many chances is a reasonable question. I think it was to do with timing, really, because Afobe, just when he was on the verge of making a breakthrough into the first team, when he might have been considered as, a substitute, maybe getting into the sort of positions that Iwobi is in right now, he picked up a really bad injury. He got a cruciate knee ligament injury, didn't he? And I think he had two of them.
He had a couple, yeah. He had a really bad time with injuries.
Yeah, so, I understood the decision to loan him out because he wasn't going to get football at Arsenal and he was at an age and a point in his career when he needed to play. So I don't really understand the conflation between Sanogo and Afobe. I think what we've seen is Afobe is a guy who had lots of talent, who Arsenal really believed in, but because of timing, because of injuries, it didn't work out for him. He had to go down the leagues in order to play regularly and to develop as a footballer. Now, it can happen in a number of ways because you look at, let's say, somebody like J. Emmanuel Thomas, who was a really big talent, who couldn't quite break into the Arsenal team and had to go down the leagues and has stayed down there, despite all the talent that he has. But Afobe has proved himself a very, very good striker. He's come up the leagues. Where did he go? MK Dons, then?
He went MK Dons on loan, then he went permanently to Wolves, obviously, for a year, and now on to Bournemouth.
You know, so, I mean, he's taking, I guess what you would say, I wouldn't say they're giant leaps, are they? They're not like huge leaps forward each time, but it's a step forward. So, you know, going from MK Dons to Wolves, from Wolves to Bournemouth, you know, this is a guy who's making slow progress in his career and is now joining, what, a club that's, where are Bournemouth in the league?
A couple of places above relegation, I imagine.
So there you go. I mean, I think that's, it's great for him. And I think he's a really good young player. And it's great to see him do well. But you have to look at the context of how his career has gone. Sanogo was brought in as a gamble. And because of various circumstances, we had to play him from time to time. And, you know, I don't really see any future for Sanogo at Arsenal, to be perfectly honest. It hasn't worked out for him at Ajax. He had some impact. You remember the FA Cup final against Hull. I don't know if it was necessarily about how he played with the ball per se, but he added an element of chaos to proceedings that Hull just suddenly couldn't deal with. You know, he mixed things up on the day, and that's a reasonable contribution for a player like him to make to the history of the club in some way. So fair fucks to him for that. I don't see a future for him, but at the same time, I don't see what it's got to do with Afobe.
I think that's fair to say. I think the timing, as you say, the point where Afobe was going to make the breakthrough was actually a little bit earlier than that. He's not that young anymore, Benik Afobe. He'll be 23 next month. And it was sort of around when he was 19, 20 that you would have thought he'd be knocking on the door. And that is when his injury problems were at their worst. Nevertheless, I think it's really heartening to see someone who's dropped down two divisions, basically, to go to MK Dons. And within, 12 months of being there, is back in the Premier League, a £10 million player. Mm. And as far as I understand it, there's about £1 million in that for Arsenal too, as a consequence of a sell-on clause. So I guess to an extent, everyone wins.
Okay, while we're on the subject of signings, a couple of them here. One from Dan Sanderson at Dan Thai Wang, and also one from SL at Wiendiola. So Dan asks, do you think Arsene is one of those embarrassing dads who tries to haggle the price of everything in a normal shop? Obviously referencing our transfer activity this January. And SL wants to know, how come it takes Arsenal almost 2 weeks to complete the signing of Elneny? Something inherently wrong with our club?
I mean, it does seem a curious one that a deal that we were on the verge of completing before the window opened, here we are January 11th still waiting. Arsene said in his press conference today it should be sorted, I think, this week. This is a quote. He said there's a lot of work permit problems and special paperwork to do and the visa, so it's obviously not a straightforward deal, a significant amount of red tape. I think it's to do with the fact that Egypt have dropped out of the top 50 football nations. Does that ring any bells with you?
Yeah. It seems to be the changes in the work permit rules were that you have to play X percent of the internationals, but you have to be the country has to be in the top 50. And I think Egypt dropped out of the top 50. But I think Arsenal have gone to it and said, like, their average position in the last 2 years is 47 or something like that. So it's a bit of an odd one.
Well, fingers crossed it gets over the line, because obviously one of the things that appealed about this signing was the expediency, the fact that we could do it swiftly and get him in. So I don't think, you know, this is any particular... I don't think it's a haggling over the price. I think Basel seem comfortable with what's going on. They've basically said on their official channels that the player's going to be moving. It's just red tape holding it up. And while we must have known this would be a problem, I guess it's difficult to know exactly how long it will take to sort. But you can bet they're working on it as fast as possible. Surely.
Yeah, I don't think this is anything to do with price. I think it's to do with bureaucracy and red tape and just the hoops that you have to jump through when you're signing a player in these kind of circumstances. So I understand people's frustration sometimes at Arsene Wenger that maybe we don't act as decisively as we might, but in this case, it's got nothing to do with price, it's got nothing to do with haggling, it's all to do with the red tape that surrounds a transfer like this. I mean, I think if we decided, obviously very early and very quickly, because these stories were going since mid-December, that we wanted this player. So I think we wanted to get him in as quickly as we could. I think you have to remember as well that probably the festive period, the holidays, people going back to work at the home office or whoever does all this visa stuff, legal people, all those kind of people would only have gone back to work really last week on the 4th of January. And so it's only a week later and, who knows why exactly it's not happening. But I guess we're on top of it now and the manager seems happy enough to talk about it. So I expect it to happen in the next couple of days.
Yeah, me too. Okay, I've got a question here about a player we faced from the opposition this week, and it's from Matt Lamborn, who's at Formula Win, and he asks, Lee Catamole, cat or mole?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a really good question.
It is a good question.
He's certainly not cat. Because
he's not a cat, is he? No, he's not got the feline grace of a cat.
No, I mean, cats are lithe, graceful, supple creatures who can fall from a great height.
I love a cat, mate.
Have you got a cat?
Do you know what? I sort of don't. I have a cat that technically is mine, but the people I live with now have allergies to cats, so this cat has been adopted by my mum.
Right.
So I go back to my mum and insist, oh, look, it's my cat. However, I do not contribute in any way to the looking after of said cat.
Right. So you're a fair-weather cat owner, that's it.
I'm a fair-weather cat owner. My cat's called Orla. She's very lovely. She's basically like the shape of a big sack. very thick fur. So if you pick her up by sort of her head end, she just sort of drapes like a puddle.
And it's called Orla.
Orla, yeah.
That's a very Irish name.
Well, I'll let you know a secret.
Go on.
Seeing as we're doing the podcast, I am, you know, a bit Irish.
Oh, well, yeah. You can sort of figure that from the surname.
There you go. So how do you feel about cats?
I like cats. They can be a bit rubbish at times.
You're a big dog guy, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, I love my dog, but we had three cats when we moved to Barcelona. And now we've only got one. There's only one left. Who's Binkley, who is a one-eyed cat. He's a tabby cat. And I think he's probably had a number of strokes. That would be my thinking. Because he's always looking for food. And it's because I think he forgets that he's been
fed. He has no short-term memory.
No, none at all. He goes and eats his food and then wanders off and goes, hey, I'm fucking hungry here. Feed me. And you go, you fucking fat bastard, I just fed you. And he is at an age now, I walked into the house the other day and I went, oh God, something has died in the house.
Oh God.
Oh no. And I realized, we figured it out later, we were looking to see had we, you know, stood in something and brought it in, but it was a cat fart, which really smelt like death.
I mean, that's grim. Yeah. I've got a story now. Make a note of this time because you may edit this out of the podcast.
Right.
But basically, my mum has got a shed in her garden. Mm-hmm. That's not the end of the story, believe it or not.
Right. Well, it was a good story up to that.
Yeah, I know. We can keep this in so far.
Okay.
And she doesn't go in it frequently. She keeps, you know, suitcases and, I don't know, odds and ends in it, tools, power tools that she never uses. And she opened it up a couple of weeks ago. And there was a terrible stench in there. and there was maggots all over the floor. And suddenly she realised that basically last time she'd opened it, a cat had unwittingly got into the shed and been shut inside.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and had met its grisly end, trapped, scratching away inside the shed at the bottom of the garden.
Oh, no.
Presumably someone had been looking for this cat. My mum's like some sort of Fritzl of the cat world, you know, keeping it hostage.
Oh, my God.
Terrifying.
That's terrible.
I don't know if we can have... Can we have this in?
It's pretty grim.
Yeah.
But we might,
I don't know if we can have this on such a sad Monday.
Well, look, it is what it is. The, you know...
My yeah. mum's a cat murderer, basically, is the headline here. I imagine that, like, there were posters up all around town. Have you seen this cat?
Oh.
My mum just blithely ignoring them all the while.
Well, she had no idea. You know, it was an unwitting...
Well, that's what she says, Andrew. I mean, you don't know my mum.
It was cat slaughter. It wasn't,
I think,
you know...
It's cat slaughter, not cat murder, crucially. Yeah. Anyway, the point being, we're talking about these cats with great affection. Surely that cannot apply to Lee Catamol.
No, because he's a big clumsy oaf of a thing. So I'd say he's much more likely to be mole than cat, for sure. Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
there's
a sort of blind mole clawing his way through the Premier League midfield.
Mm, like, I love... Big cats are amazing as well. You know, tigers and lions, they're brilliant. They're fantastic.
Oh, beautiful animals.
Mm. Yeah, leave the fucking tigers alone.
And I'll tell you what, a mole, and I know what a mole looks like because my old dog, Flora, used to catch them and bring them to me.
Right.
With, you know, distressing regularity. A mole is not a beautiful animal.
They're really not. They're really not. They're quite, they're sort of blind, aren't they? Lots of them.
They are pretty much blind in daylight, yeah.
That would explain why Catamol can't make a clean tackle, because he just can't. He's trying to use his, like, other senses to find out where the player is, and he's just too late. He can't see where kneecaps and shins really are, and that's why he kicks them all the time.
Exactly. It all makes sense. Mm. It all makes sense. So I guess we're going Lee Catamol, mole.
Yes. Are there any other... animals or footballers with animals in their name who fit that particular kind of animal?
Great question.
I can't think of any. But maybe if I just put it in Google, footballers with animal names.
I mean, there's going to be loads. There's got to be like an animal 11 out there.
Yeah. Footballers with animals in their names. There's a forum. I've got it. Robin Van Persie. Okay, that's not good. Darren Peacock. He was a bit of a cock, wasn't he? Yeah.
He was indeed.
Rule Fox.
That's a cool name, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
Shame because he played for Spurs and Norwich and Newcastle and a host of other horrible teams, but cool name.
What else? Sean Goater.
Feed the goat.
Mm. Barry Venison. I wouldn't like to feast on the meat of Barry Venison.
No.
I like venison. It's very nice meat, but not... If it comes with bleached blonde hair and a mullet, get out of here.
I agree with you. Not delicious.
No.
He lives in America now, Barry Venison, just for the record.
He's in America now, or he's an American now? What did you say?
I said he lives in America.
Right.
He probably is an American. I think he's been there about 15 years. He lives in LA.
Mm.
I mean, you know, so that turned out all right. I guess he always looked kind of LA, didn't he? Always had that rock star vibe to him.
Yeah, he looked like a sort of a cast-off member from, like, Twisted Sister or Whitesnake or one of those.
Yeah, he's out there with Warren Barton and their great hair, having a lovely time.
I wonder what Warren Barton's hair is like these days.
Significantly shorter, I tell you. It's lost some of its volume.
Some of its luster.
Yeah. Can't think of any more animals. But, okay.
I'm sure people will come at us on Twitter.
Come at me, bruv.
And
that was just for our more urban listenership.
Hey, listen, we're trying to get to number one on iTunes here. We've got to play
every card we've got.
Exactly. We need a broad reach. Appeal to everybody.
Like Petr Cech.
Yes. Petr Cech.
Austin did speak about that. Did you see that? He spoke about the advantage of Cech's height. He was like, when he stretches for things, he can reach further. I was like, well, that's a gimme, mate. That's an obvious one.
Well, it is, especially if someone's put the biscuits on the top shelf. Like Ospina would be going, oh, I'm really hungry for a biscuit and I can't get there. Ospina has to get a chair to stand on to get the biscuits, and Petr Cech just sticks one of his big long hands out and he can get them. I mean, that's the true measure of a great goalkeeper.
I don't think Ospina needs any more biscuits, mate. I'll tell you now. Looking at him in that goalie kit, I think he's all right.
Mm. All right, here's a final question from me. Mm. This comes from Patch, who's at Nutmeg Gunner. Right. And he says, with our recent dependence on Ozil and Alexis returning to fitness, have you ever seen a camel in real life?
Ooh. Big question to finish the show.
Mm.
Oh, have I ever seen a camel? Well, immediately I'm going, I haven't been to Egypt. And for some reason in my head, that's the only place there are camels. Egypt, camels, those two are inextricably linked in my mind.
Mm.
But I know that's not true. I'm sure camels get about. I don't think I have seen a camel. I don't think... Oh, hang on. I've seen a camel in a zoo.
Yeah, I think I have too.
To me, that doesn't count.
No, you need to see them in the wild, cameling about, you know.
I want to see a camel in a desert. That's what I want to see. I want to ride a camel. I've never ridden a camel.
I'm just leaving that hang. No, that's okay.
Sure.
No, I haven't, and I'm not sure that I would like it. I mean, they do camel racing, don't they?
I mean, that sounds dangerous.
It does sound dangerous, but did I read somewhere recently that they used to have kids as the camel jockeys, and now that they have kind of... they've replaced them with either monkeys or robots. I'm not sure.
You're just making this up. There's no camel racing where they're racing kids and monkeys and robots on a camel.
There fucking is.
There's not. How could that happen? Animal rights would be annoyed. Kids' rights would be annoyed.
Hey, why would animal rights be annoyed at a camel just running through the desert with a kid on its back?
I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about training the monkey to ride the camel. What's going on there?
Well, I mean, you can train monkeys to do all kinds of shit.
Yeah, but why? Why are you training them? And who... Are they racing against each other, the monkeys and the kids and the robots? Or is it separate races?
Little Lester Piggott monkeys. Like fucking...
What, dressed up as little jockeys, are they? Like in the PG Tips ads, like getting on top of a camel, riding all the way, and there's a robot chasing them, probably with a gun or something, shooting at him because it's like Mario Kart or some nonsense.
Pretty much what's happening, man.
Chucking red shells at each other from the back of a camel. This is mad. I knew things were a bit backwards in Egypt, but when Mohamed El Neni arrives, my first question is going to be, right, what do you know about these camel racings? Who should I be backing, the kids, the monkeys, or the robots?
Yeah, you ask him. See what he says.
I'm going to the unveiling. I'm going to the press conference. I'm going to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, forget about him doing keepy-ups. We want answers to the real questions. That's the thing, man. That's what's going on with camels.
Have you seen a camel? No.
No, I haven't, but I have seen a donkey with an erection.
Well, then, you know, swings and roundabouts, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that's nature at its finest. What can I tell you?
It is. I mean, this is a David Attenborough-esque tone to proceedings has taken over.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lovely. Well, lovely to end the show that started on a somber note, on a bit of a high there.
Absolutely.
With a beautiful image of a donkey with an erection.
And, well, no, hang on. That's not, what? You know, monkeys riding camels with robot jockeys after them. That's much better.
Okay, fine. We'll go with that.
We'll go with that. All right. Well, look, we have a big game. Big game on Wednesday.
It is a big game, isn't it?
It does feel
midweek game.
How are you feeling about it?
Floodlights. I feel a bit Neil Mellery about it,
oh,
if I'm honest
no.
with you. Yeah.
Fucking fat bastard.
I feel more Neil Mellery about it than I do Robert Pirra's beautiful curled goal about it. But maybe it's just because it's floodlit and that always frightens me a bit. I don't know. It's a tough couple of weeks now, isn't it? I think we've got Liverpool, then Stoke, and then
Chelsea.
And Chelsea, who Sod's Law will be back to their something like their best for that game. And, you know, it's inevitable, isn't it?
Well, it is, seeing as they've actually, you know, started trying again. That could have been the difference.
Football.
Yeah.
Yeah. That will help.
Well, look, I hope it goes well. Obviously, two big away games coming now, this week, Anfield, then the Britannia. So it's going to be a tough week. So let's hope we can keep this momentum going.
We can, yeah. 9 points from these three games, nothing less.
That will do.
Or I'll be on strike on the next podcast.
All right. Well, look, we're going to leave it there. Thank you, as always, for listening. Don't forget the iTunes stuff. Let's get us to number one. And I'll be here on Friday with a regular Arsecast, back next Monday with James for another Arsecast Extra. Until then.
Bye-bye.
I'm closer to the golden dawn, immersed in Crowley's uniform of imagery. I'm living in a silent film, portraying Himmler's sacred realm of dream reality. I'm frightened by the total goal, drawing to the ragged hole, and I ain't got the power anymore. No, I ain't got the power anymore. I'm the twisted name on Garbo's eyes, living proof of Churchill's lies. I'm destiny. I'm torn between the light and dark, where others see their target, divine symmetry. I ain't got the power anymore.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.